This is the October 24 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists for the day include Dave Chatterton of Strategic Farm Marketing. He's out of Champaign, Illinois. Bill Gentry is with us from Risk Management Commodities out of Lafayette, Indiana. Randy Martinson is here from Martinson Ag Risk Management in Fargo, North Dakota. And Mike Zuzlo is with us from GlobalAnalytics.biz out of Atchison, Kansas. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. Find us, listen to us on demand, online, anytime you'd like at willag.org, willag.org. Let's get a list of items that maybe we should discuss for the day. I think Randy Martinson of Martinson Ag Risk Management out of Fargo, let's start with you. What are a couple of items for the day?
Well, I think, you know, of course, the big thing that we're seeing up here that affects us is, of course, is harvest progress. How much of the crop will be harvested? How much will be left? I think that's the biggest thing that's kind of on everybody's mind right now is just what kind of progress we're going to be making. You know, our weather is going to be turning here again pretty soon. And, you know, we've got a lot of corn, a lot of soybeans to go through. So I think right now the biggest question is how much will get harvested, how much will get left, and where are yields falling?
And Mike Zuzula, GlobalAnalytics.biz.
Well, the theme of buying beans and selling corn continues, Todd. And I wonder how long that's got a life left in it with the situation on the spreads and also how long can we run the China bull market on no details on the U.S.-China trade agreement? So 940, big resistance point, haven't been able to get above in beans. And I'm more and more of the opinion that we're going to get the need to have corn on our side. So I'd like to kick that around with the other guests.
Dave Chatterton from Strategic Farm Marketing.
Yeah, I echo a little bit of what Mike said. I think the U.S.-Canada is also obviously the biggest driver of price here in the futures market. But locally, we've got some yield surprises where yields are actually coming in a little bit better than anticipated. Certainly not at last year's levels. But when we put those together with what's become a very strong basis market locally and look at our MFP payments and ARC PLC, we're getting to some numbers that are very attractive for customers. So local basis is something I think that needs to be talked about. Corn demand also is a concern going forward. We look at our export sales pace and we look at where ethanol demand is, and we try and create a path forward for higher corn values. As Mike mentioned, we're up against the top end of these trading ranges. It's a really interesting argument looking down the road here.
And Bill Gentry, did they miss anything?
You know, I don't think so. I think the basis levels are very, very focal point for us and for most guys. The question that I have is, as we get deeper into harvest and get a little bit more corn in, two things. Is basis going to taper off because the demand's already been satisfied? And also the quality, because what we've got around here is stuff that's 20% ready and the other stuff that's not going to get ready. And how are the processors going to process it?
Well, let's start there. And Bill, I think I'll begin with you. Basis levels are doing what, and what are your expectations? And I want to go around the horn with everybody to see what they think on this one.
Our basis levels were really, really strong. They've turned a little bit more mixed, but still are relatively strong. I think that the demand for the processors are standing in, but some of the elevators further south are getting filled up and don't really need any more stuff. I think realistically, the quality of this crop is still a big concern because I've talked to some producers around us that stuff's down to 20% and they're picking and choosing where they get that. But on my drive home, I see what I call checkerboard fields where some of it's green and some of it's brown. And it's not going to go real easy and it's not going to dry down very good. It's going to be a real tough batch. And from history, the processors like we have in here in Lafayette, they have a trouble processing those when the quality is not consistent. And I think that's one of the situations we've got this year.
We'll work our way from the east to the west, stopping here in Champaign next with Dave Chatterton on basis levels from Strategic Farm Marketing.
Yeah, Todd, I mean, really interesting fall this year when we talk about where values are at. I mean, if we looked in, I think if we went back to the spring and said, hey, we're going to see 35 to 50 overpaid by some processors in Indiana during the harvest period, we would have probably shaken our heads just a little bit here. But that strength is bled from east to west. And when we see those values, whether we're at where we're at here in Champaign or if we go further on to Decatur or even further east, it's just a spread mentality or a logistical mentality here. And those numbers are pretty impressive. I think what we also haven't talked about is that we're seeing some of those values translate into some pretty strong offers already for not only NOVDs, but also JFM and looking forward. And I guess with a very strong basis this summer, we've probably seen some of the commercials clear out, maybe even get short some basis, and are now trying to backfill a little bit and worried partially because of how tight farmers are holding and their mentality towards the U.S.-China deal, and I think partially because of the quality issue that we're seeing some very good offers out in the deferred. So with a little bit of carry in this market and some strong historical basis numbers, again, I think as a producer, it's time to run your numbers and look at where you're at and base your expectations on something that maybe isn't too high but is still very profitable compared to especially where we thought we might be in May or June of this year.
Mike Zuzula at globalanalytics.biz out of Atchison, Kansas.
Yeah, I mean, I think that we're probably seeing a similar pattern of what Bill and Dave are talking about out here, Todd, but it's not as extreme. You know, Fort Recovery, Ohio is 50 over. A client north of Lafayette called and said that they were running almost 40 over, and they would even push that into, I think, around 25 over into the March. We here in this area, our yields are very close to last year's. We have a lot to get out, though, and I think that that's where the corn harvest progress numbers, if I had to guess, we're going to continue to see really strong basis levels in states like Illinois and Indiana and Ohio if this weather pattern manifests itself next week, because we're looking at very cold temperatures, snow around Halloween. Now, Nebraska clients, they are the ones that probably are the most surprised by their yields being bad. They came in, and a lot of them are getting two-thirds of the way done, so they've had a pretty fast harvest, and that's usually not good. Their irrigated ground is running 210, 220. They would like to have had that 30 to 40 bushels over, and their beans, the same thing. They're probably running about 20%, 25% lighter than normal. So I think this is one of those years where you're really going to have to look at your revenue per acre. You're going to have to match your yield up against that cash price, and you're really going to have to look at where you're at in terms of your yields versus last year. And so individualized marketing is going to be really, really crucial in the cash market. I think futures maybe has a little bit more unified look to it, but cash marketing is going to be very, very difficult if you're not staying on top of it.
And finally, on basis, Randy Martinson of Martinson Ag Risk Management out of Fargo.
You know, it's probably one of the first times I can say in our history that we've seen a positive basis for corn at harvest time up here in the Northern Plains. So we actually have ethanol plants and end users coming in bidding aggressively. This was about a week ago, right after the snow went through and they needed to get product in to keep the plants running. So we were actually seeing a pretty attractive basis level. Now, it's slimmed down a little bit. We've seen it widen back, but it's still an extremely tight basis for us at this harvest time frame. Not a lot of corn is being harvested. As I hear you guys talk about 20% moisture corn, we're talking more in that 25 to 35% moisture corn. And guys are combining it on the idea that a lot of the end users are offering no discounts at 25% moisture. So a lot are combining it at the 35, getting it down to 25 and hauling it in to the ethanol plant. So we are seeing a little bit of progress take place, but our basis for corn has gotten to become extremely tight, and it will stay tight because we're not going to see much harvest. It's going to be kind of hand to mouth as far as harvest goes for corn. On the soybean side, we started to see a little bit of exports take place. Some of the purchases from China have come in and hit our market a little bit, as a lot of trains are showing up at the elevators, and we've seen our basis levels get back to within five-year averages on soybeans. So we're right now kind of encouraged by the basis levels, telling guys to sell if you can get crop in and get a little bit of harvesting. You know, go ahead and let it go and look at other ways to own it.
I'd like to stay with you for just a second. I want to talk about corn and soybeans and condition of the crop and how likely it is to be harvested at this point. So in Fargo, I think about 4 inches of snow, that's gone. I've checked in the places that were the deepest in that Carrington and Harvey area, where they had almost 3 feet. I know that's gone as well. You had more rain. Can you tell me about what conditions are like and what producers are thinking about trying to get this crop in, and actually how far along it was, because it froze as well?
It did. And you know, we haven't froze hard enough, though, to be able to support anything out in the field. So, yeah, we did pick up some pretty good snows, especially the central part to the northern part of the state. Harvest is moving along, but very, very slowly. I can say that North Dakota is probably now the leader in purchasing of tracks and rear wheel assist for combines. I think just about everybody has bought them for their combines at this point. So I know even on our farm we did that, and I never thought we'd ever see that happen. But progress has been extremely slow. A lot of guys taking the hilltops or taking the higher ground. Lower spots are being left. Yield is good. I mean, that's the surprising part, is that the crop is worth going to get. A lot of guys saying their soybeans are rivaling last year's yields, anywhere between that 35 up to 55, 60 area. So they're trying to get the crop, but they're leaving now because of the wet conditions and because they can't, the roads can't support trucks being loaded. We're seeing a little bit of an issue with the last part of the harvest. Now, we're supposed to get a nice couple of days here up until Saturday. We've got what looks like it's going to be warmer, drier conditions, and that's going to push a lot of guys to finish off what they can in the soybeans. A lot will be left. I'm expecting somewhere between about 30% of the crop of soybeans will be left until the ground freezes so that they can get in and get some of the wetter spots. But for corn, a lot of guys are looking at maybe the after the first week of November to the end of November to get out and combine corn, because the moisture level is coming in at about that 35. We've gotten some down into the 25 area where guys are looking to start going, but everybody's going to concentrate on beans, trying to get that done. They're going to wait with the corn.
And so on the beans, just to clarify, if you get a snow, and I don't know whether that's in your forecast, it is likely to stay on. Those beans, that 30% won't be harvested, correct?
We do have snow in the forecast for next Monday. If it's measurable, yes, that last 30% will not be harvested of soybeans.
And but the corn, they'll go get one way or the other.
Corn, they'll be able to go get, you know, and we're, you know, so far the corn test weights have been all over the board. Most of them are coming in at that 52 to 54 area. We've had a few reports down in that 44 to 48 area, but depending on variety. But again, the yields are good right now. That we haven't seen a lot of integrity from the snow, first snow that came through. A lot of it melted, went, disappeared, and not a lot of issue other than the mud and the fact that they have to run their headers up in the soybeans. They're losing about 10% yield there. But for corn, it looks like we should be okay.
When you cross the line into Minnesota, do they have the same kind of problems? Because that snowstorm seemed to end right there at the line almost.
Minnesota had more rain, and they're seeing a lot more muddier conditions. So they're still dealing with we're all dealing with a lot of mud and the fact that we can't travel out in the fields. But yes, Minnesota didn't see the snow, but they got more rain.
And then how about South Dakota? Have you heard anything from them?
South Dakota picked up some pretty good snows in the, you know, north central part of the state. But again, they picked up some pretty good rains. The southern, I think, is a little bit better. It's the farther north you go, the muddier it is and the more difficult that they're having getting the harvest done.
Dave Chatterton, I want to come back to you and to continue the basis commentary for just a bit more. You were talking about those strong markets. The basis was good. Coupling that with MFP, I don't know. I'm sure that's for corn. But what are you thinking about sales and what producers should do for both crops?
Yeah, Todd, I mean, it's always a question of space. We do have some carry in these markets still. The strength of the nearby basis has narrowed up those carries to some degree, so it makes it a little tougher decision. But certainly with farmers, you know, producers who have the ability to hold the crop on farm, that carry opportunity is there. The question is, do we lock that in now or do we wait for higher values? I think, as Randy indicated a little bit, if there's a question at all, I think we're a sell first, store later kind of a mentality here, in the fact that you can own this crop on paper. I don't know how much more we can really expect from the corn basis. Bean basis is high from historical harvest standard terms, but not certainly the premiums that we've seen from the corn market. So, you know, the decision there, again, I mean, those numbers are a little skinnier when you look at where we're at from a yield perspective, from a cash price perspective, from that MFP, you know, issue. It's not quite the layup maybe that we're seeing in corn, but certainly producers have opportunities here, particularly when you look at your local market, whether you're selling to a processor, a local co-op, a river terminal, whatever it may be. But look at the carry that you're offered in those local markets. Look out at your Jan bids, look at your March bids, figure out where you're at and what makes sense, and remember that we can own these things back on paper if need be.
Mike Zuzulo, do you have a cash strategy for your producers and a purchase back if that's the case?
I think generally speaking, Todd, the beans have a bigger premium in both terms of basis and futures. And I think it's, you know, kind of dovetailing my last comment and getting a little bit more detail about what's happening in the corn market. If it's carrying a discount like I think it is in terms of both cash and futures, we got to recall that back on June 3rd, Minnesota was 21% behind on corn planting than the 2018. North Dakota was 13% behind. South Dakota, 45% behind. In Illinois, we had 45% of the crop planted on June 3rd. That was 55% behind the prior year. And in Indiana, it was 31%. That's 67% behind. You've got, again, two different crops, and we tend to forget these things as time goes on and our memories continue to get filled up with newer and newer news stories. I think this is the year where corn, I believe, in especially those states that have been delayed in planting with this weather pattern coming in, I really am struggling with the idea of nine states being 15% or more behind last year in harvest with a long way to go before they get to a dry down level. You're talking about essentially 25 million acres of harvested corn. You're talking about 4 billion bushels. And I really wonder that last 30% of the crop, how much and how fast we're going to get it in. So I think the bean harvest is going a lot faster. I drove, unfortunately, I had to drive to West Lafayette last weekend to a funeral. And we drove through Missouri, Illinois, Indiana, up to, you know, Lafayette, West Lafayette. Unbelievable how much progress had been made in beans. Unbelievable how little had been done in corn. So I'm a much faster seller in beans on the cash market. I'll buy them back on a Brazilian weather market on paper. I'm going to leave the corn alone, especially in these key states.
Do you expect the North Dakota to be a bellwether in the crop production report as producers will be asked not only about their yields, but about abandonment?
Well, I don't know if North Dakota will or not, because I'm not sure. When I was up there at the Big Iron, it seemed like there was two different crops being grown, and I didn't know whether Randy could shed a light on the idea that maybe what we're getting right now is the earlier crop that had the chance to get a good yield, but is there another 20 or 25% out there that's going to be poor? I think Todd, Illinois and Indiana and Ohio are going to be the bellwethers when it's all said and done, because if the demand for corn, knowing that we have the tightest world stocks to use ratios in 3 years for corn, if the demand for corn gets any better than it is right now, which Dave's right, it's terrible, but if it gets any better, we're going to need more corn.
Well, I think Bill Gentry, I turn to you. Have you guys been talking there in the risk management offices about whether that second crop, the stuff that was planted in June 5th or later, is going to yield?
Yeah, I can tell you we haven't been talking in the office because I'm the only non-farmer, so it's mostly been on the phone. But yes, we have been talking about that. I really think that, like I said earlier, the corn that can be taken care of is done. The beans, they've been working through it. If we get the snow that is forecast, it's going to slow them down. I think they're going to try to press on. The question that we have is how muddy is it going to get? And a lot of guys have really kind of pushed this spring to get things done. So we've got compaction issues. If we compound that with harvest problems with compaction issues, that's going to really set us up for a real deficit starting next year. So the bottom line is, I think the impact there needs to be reconciled in some way, shape, or form. I know that the agronomists in our office talk about ripping as much stuff as you can, but that's not really an option going forward. I think that this year's yields are 10 to 15% behind a year ago, and it is peaks and valleys. But this crop it's standing in pretty well. But I also think that the stock quality for corn is really an issue. I think if we get some big wins, and we already have, that the crop's going to basically fall over, and it's going to be tough to harvest. I've seen some pictures on the internet that some guys are already having this issue going forward. It could take us quite a while to finish this harvest up. The stuff's not going to dry down in some areas very good. Drying it down is going to be an issue. So it's just going to be a tough crop to manage going forward.
Well, let me ask this a different way, and I want to go around the horn on this. I've been out, and I've looked, and know which cornfields are June 5 or after, maybe as late as June 15 or 20, and those ears are hanging, and they're filled to full to the end. Is that what you're hearing? And are producers of a mind that this crop, the second crop, might be better than they expect?
Yes, I've heard the exact same story. The question that we've got and the concern that we have is it's not drying. And the kernels, the way the kernels set up, going through the dryer, it's going to be a really tough batch. So, yes, I think the yield numbers out of the combine are going to be very good. But the crop itself is going to be hard to process. And I also think that the storability is going to be a question. So moving it into the pipeline is probably going to be in short order.
And so your light test weight in that case too, right?
Very possible. I'm not an agronomist that can calculate that myself. But when you're only 50 or 70% to black layer, you're going to have some in my from my desk.
Well, that's a, if you're only 50 to, yeah, well, if you're 50%, you might make it. If you're halfway to milk line, you might make it. But if you're less than that, you're probably a 30 to 40% reduction. If you're black layer, you're 5 to 12% if you froze, if the crop froze. And most of it, I think we can say, actually froze. A good part of it in Iowa, parts of Illinois, all of the Dakotas, and to the southwest. So let me see what Dave Chatterton has to say. What, when you get on your weekly meetings, are they saying about the second corn crop?
Yeah, Todd, I mean, I like a little bit of what Bill said. I think our yields have been better. The national yield network that we participate in, you know, year to date, we're down about 5.7% versus where we were a year ago. Now that's maybe, you know, that's actually improved a little bit as harvest has come along. And I think a lot of these late yields are certainly not last year's yields, and they're certainly not, you know, bin busting yields, but I think they are better than what the producer expected, as little as even 30, 45, or 60 days ago. The quality of those bushels is an issue, but it's an issue, I think, for the basis and for the spread market. It's not necessarily something that the flat price, you know, futures are going to take into account. Farmers do seem to be stalling out a little bit. In our particular area, we're talking about 25% plus corn that guys are a little reluctant to go get, but you know, propane prices are off of their lows by, let's say, 10 or 12 cents a gallon, but they're still historically very cheap. And, you know, we would recommend the guys to go ahead and get that corn and get it harvested, get it in the best condition you can. There's certainly a lot of challenges in that regard. But when you look forward at where we're going to be, you know, from our numbers on our national yield network right now, we're running, let's just say, roughly 195 on a national yield. Now, our number is inflated versus the USDA number because we draw from the core of the Corn Belt or the high production areas. So typically we run about 25 bushels above the USDA. If you take the 195 minus the 25, we're at a 170 national yield implication. The USDA is sitting at 168.4. If we take our bean number, we're at about 59.5. We run at about a 12 bushel differential to the USDA. You back into that math, we're at about 47.5 with the USDA running at 46.9. So I think the message there that I would draw or that I would put out is that if you're expecting the USDA to come in with big yield declines in this upcoming November crop report, I'm not sure that that's in the cards. That will have to work itself out probably into the January report when things like what's going on in North Dakota and the discussions that we've had there get worked into the mix. So basis and spreads will be an issue for those local quality issues. I'm not sure that we're going to see that translated into necessarily a futures concern or a futures risk point that sustains a rally here above these recent highs.
And your point about the Dakotas is it would be abandonment and harvested acres and yield might not go down. It could go up, in fact, but total crop size would go down.
Yes, and I think it's a question of when we know that, or at least when the USDA is willing to put that on paper. And certainly I don't know that that's going to be on this November 8th crop report. So we've got, you know, looking forward just a little bit, we've got the crop report on the 8th. We've got the U.S. and China supposedly ready to sign an interim trade deal. Then the next week after that, then we'll be looking to the Deese report and the Jane report from that point forward.
Well, Mike, that brings me to you and your thought, what farmers are telling you about this second crop. And then you did want to talk about China as well.
Yeah, I mean, the biggest thing that I'm hearing that, and I agree with 100% with what Bill and Dave said overall, and I think that's a key element is the basis in your local bid. When you kind of drill it into what specific producers who are getting into that second crop. And I think that's the point to be made. We're really not getting into that second crop yet,
right?
From what I'm hearing. But what I am hearing on the early stuff is that The end rows are a lot better than when they get in the middle of fields. The flat black dirt is suffering unless it's extremely well drained. It is actually dropping yields, and I've heard that in Douglas County. Excuse me, I've heard that over in Morgan County or West Morgan County, west of Jacksonville, closer to Winchester area. But it's just a few people talking about it right now, and you really can't get a good beat on it right now for that second crop. I will go back to what Bill talked about, and what I tried to initiate too is the idea: are we going to get that last 30% of the corn out? I don't think the market thinks there's going to be any problem yet. I think they're really betting on the idea that we're going to have a normal harvest. And it, just like with planting, we didn't have a normal planting. And look what they did in May. I think we ought to be ready for that in terms of the corn market. And that segues into the U.S.-China trade deal. I'm still very nervous about the U.S.-China trade deal. I was before today's speech by Vice President Pence at the Wilson Center, but he made it a Chinese foreign policy speech of the Trump administration, and it was not pretty. And I threw it up on my blog for public access on the website to listen to it for anybody that wanted to. But I'm really nervous that this phase one deal, because it's got intellectual property wrapped around it, it's going to be really tough to get any kind of details out of it. And I just don't think the market can stand for more lack of details, Todd.
And this morning, the Chinese saying that they would buy 20 billion bushels of ag product in the first year, which is not what the president and the Trump administration had said. They said 40 to 50 billion. And they also, in that same breath, said, dependent on whether we sign a deal or not. So a lower number and still contingent, of course, on signing a deal. I think I do want to check, Randy, with you. Were there two crops planted in North Dakota, too, like the rest of the United States?
You know, there kind of was. I mean, we had the earlier planted crop that went in. You know, some guys were able to get in that May time frame and were able to get some corn in. A lot of it, you know, early May. Most of it was put in at the end of May, early June time frame. For the most part, though, we are kind of seeing it all kind of come to, depending on the maturity levels. I mean, you know, days that they had, whether it was 85-day corn or 110-day corn, we're seeing whether or not it's been made, will make it to maturity or not. For the most part, though, a lot of the corn is coming in, and it's varying, but a lot of it is above that 25% moisture. Guys here will combine up to 30% moisture corn. We've got the dryer system set up, so a lot of them will take it off. We're used to that kind of, you know, anything, you know, between in the 25 area. There is a lot, though, that is in that 35 range that will not be harvested. I would say at this point we'd be looking at somewhere between 30 to 40% of the corn in North Dakota, western Minnesota, that will not get harvested until after January. And that, I think, is going to kind of skew USDA's numbers a little bit, because we're not going to see anything really solid for production out of the northern plains until we probably get into that March time frame.
Wait, can you tell me about the 110-day corn? Did you say they were planting 110-day corn?
I did say that. And on our farm, we will put in 95-day corn on our farm, and we will, you know, we've been okay with that. It might be a little bit higher moisture, but the yield is of course, always better, so it's, you know, we can make it work. For the most part, most guys are putting in 85 to 87-day corn.
All right, so I'm sure we've muddied lots of waters here, so maybe I should go back through and get some real idea of where you all think they ought to be. We'll start with, well, I'll do each of you on corn and soybeans, because producers will be taking some of that crop to storage, or at least they'll take it to the elevator. So let's deal with that. And if you want to talk about what they're putting in the bin and if there's something they should do with that, we can go along with that too. I think, Bill Gentry, why don't I start with you?
I think from this vantage point, rewarding the basis levels, which is primarily in corn, and so I'm probably putting a few more beans back. But I don't think they've got a tight grip on it. They're not going to hold it for a long time. The time value of money here and the spreads being what they are, or carry being what it is, does not really give us a strong incentive to store for an extended period of time. And I think also, and we didn't mention that earlier, but I think a lot of lenders are getting a little bit nervous with this year's crop and the last couple of years in our hip pocket. And then what kind of what's setting up for next year. So I think producers are being challenged a little bit to be a little bit frugal in some of their decision making, which means we're probably not going to be as tight gripped on this crop as we might have thought coming into harvest. And especially when you think about not getting the rest of harvest done till February or March or when things get fit, it's going to be a long road to hoe, pure and simple.
Dave Chatterton.
Yeah, Todd, I mean, I would agree with what Bill said about the basis, and in particular looking at carry in your own market and what your storage will return to you. But in general terms, we're looking at being somewhere between 45, 50, and maybe even a little over 50% sold coming out of harvest. And that means either sold off the combine in the fall to the elevator or sold forward into those carries where they're available. When you look forward, you know, we can come back in and own corn on paper. We can own, let's say, a March $4.450 call spread for maybe 11 cents and participate that way. Again, it's awful tough to ask a lot more out of the basis when we're seeing some 25 and 30 over numbers posted at the processors. When we look at beans, you know, China is the wild card here and what they will or what they won't do. We talked about this 20 billion number now that's being touted. That number basically puts them back in line with where they were previous to the trade war in 2017. And if you look at the amount of beans that we've got on the books now, we've got a South American market that's still cheaper than U.S. values in the spot market, and again, cheaper out in that February period. We've got a very compressed window between, let's say, Nov, Dec, Jan, and a little bit of Feb before that South American discount kicks back in where we can sell China a large amount of beans. So I think you want to be ready to pull the trigger, have your numbers up there. We've gotten up into this 9, you know, from a November futures perspective. We've gotten up against this 9, you know, these summer highs and this 945, 947 level a few times and have not been able to push through it. If we are able to, I think you want to act rather quickly and get some sales out there. And if you look back on this market the last few years, you've had to stay ahead of the game here. You've had to be proactive early in the session. We're already looking at 2020 corn with those values above $4. I think you want to be aware of that as a producer as well. And do that. And one thing that we didn't talk about, Informa was out this week. They talked about, they've been one of many people talking about new crop acreage, but they had their new crop, their corn acreage up 5.4 million acres in the U.S. next spring. Their soybean acres up 8.8 million. Now, a lot of that comes from this year's prevent plant, but if you think of the situation this year, if we hadn't had those prevent plant acres and some of the yield challenges that we've had, where we would be at. I think, unfortunately, it's still a time to play some defense until we get a little bit more clarity or comfort around a potential U.S.-China trade deal going forward.
Randy Martinson?
I agree. We need to take advantage of the strong basis levels while they're here. And so I'm telling, I mean, for us, we're telling guys, you know, move the soybeans off, get those sold. I'm a little worried that we're not going to get to deal with China. But I kind of agree with everybody else there that there's a lot more going on than what we know. And I think there's going to be a lot more contention going forward. So beans is one thing I want to get into the market and move. If we have big breaks, you can reown them with call options or do something on those lines. Right now, we're seeing good, strong basis levels on the corn. You know, once we get a little farther into harvest and it's going to spread out, I think, you know, corn is the one we're going to put in the bin. We're going to get in condition. Basis levels, I think, will stay strong up here in the Northern Plains through March because we're going to be, like I said, go hand to mouth as far as harvest is concerned with the corn market. And I think that's going to continue to help that market. And I think corn acres aren't going to really see anything big until we get into the January report. So I think corn's got a longer story to tell. I think even wheat's got a longer story than that to tell. We're going to be likely not seeing a million acres harvested up here of spring wheat as far as North Dakota and Montana are concerned. On the kind of Dave mentioned about prevent plant, we're going to see a worse problem next year in prevent plant than we did this year up here in the Northern Plains because we've got a soil profile right now that is extremely full as far as the water is concerned. We've got rivers overflowing, and we really can't get rid of it. The only way we're going to get rid of that water right now is that it runs off, which anything new will run off or evaporate, and we will not have good enough temperatures or good enough climate to be able to evaporate a lot of this water. So we're going to go in extremely full as far as the profile is concerned with our soils. We're going to see a lot more prevent plant next year because we're muddying up a lot of fields, tearing up a lot of fields, and it's going to take a while to get them back into production. So I think for next year's cropping, it's going to be a little bit more of a wild card on where acres fall just because there's going to be three states that are going to have some big issues with what they're going to get planted.
You know, following up before I answer your question, Todd, as the Randy was just talked about, we're already talking with the Army Corps of Engineers. They just had a big meeting here today down by Kansas City. The 100 million acres of 2020 corn, I think, is going to be extremely hard to get, regardless of price, but especially at this price level that we're at right now in relation to new crop beans, because we have just now had our highway across the Amelia Earhart Bridge opened as of yesterday. It's been down the better part of 6 months because of the Gavin's Point Dam release that has been going on up in South Dakota ahead of the next big winter that North Dakota and that area is going to have. So I think that's something we really have to think about in the longer term. But getting back to just trying to, you know, put icing on the cake of what Bill and Dave and Randy have already said, I'm at $808.50 an acre revenue on corn. If you can get that, start selling it. If you can get $540 to $600 an acre on revenue on beans, start selling it. Take the beans faster than you do the corn. Watch those 2020 bean prices. And like Dave said, especially given that 940 area that we haven't been able to get above in lead month beans, if we can't get above that next week on this bad weather and as November gets into delivery, I'll be real nervous that that 975 price isn't a place where you want to get some hedges for red Nov or 2020 beans put in place.
And I think I'll get a final word from each of you at this point as well. Let's, Mike, let you wrap things up.
One of the things that Dave especially would know a lot about is the IMO 2020. It's a new sulfur content for marine fuel all around the globe. The whole fleet in the United States and the world is going to have to go from 3.5% sulfur to 0.5% sulfur content in their shipping fleets. This could be an extremely big deal in the diesel market. That thing takes effect for 80 to 90% of our world trade. It takes effect on January 1. So get educated on that and get with your fuel people.
And Bill Gentry, your final word?
I think one of the things that we've talked about in our office for this entire growing season is this year has been an event. And I think the repercussions are going to be long lasting. So I think we need to really plan ahead and take advantage of the opportunities that we've talked about in this presentation and also be realistic that it's not going to be a short fix. It's going to take a long time and we'll just have to be patient and work forward from here.
Dave Chatterton.
Yeah, Todd, maybe we've talked a lot about what's gone on inside the U.S., but looking globally just real quick, I would remind people that we still have very ample world supplies, corn, beans, wheat, feed, grains, however you want to look at that. Because of the currency situation and a few things in the U.S.-China situation going on, Brazil and South America, not so much Argentina, but certainly Brazil, look to plant another strong crop. They've got very strong prices. They've got a very strong incentive to go ahead and get a big crop planted and try and harvest that and compete with us in the world market. That's also true in the Ukraine or in the Black Sea or in the other regions that compete strongly for exports. So the world is changing a little bit, and I used the word defense a little bit earlier, and I hate to say it in that format, but I think if you look at where prices are today versus where many farmers thought they might be in April and May and June when we were struggling with planting and yield was going to be, you know, 30% below trend and all the things that were talked about, there's still a lot of producers hanging on to that kind of mentality, and certainly that's true in portions of our backyard, and we have to account for that, particularly in our cash marketing. But when we think just a little bit bigger, I think it makes sense to set targets at a realistic level. The U.S.-China, we have to realize, can be a game changer, but that can work in both directions. If it continues to drag on or it breaks down, it works one way. If it's a situation where the Trump number comes true and somehow we can get $40 or $50 billion in ag purchases out of them, or something approaching that number, it's a very different situation. It presents some risks along the way, but it's a good idea to be looking forward and to continue to work yourself into sales and take advantage of the forward premium in the marketplace.
And finally, Randy Martinson.
Yeah, I would kind of piggyback with some of the other guys that said, watch your, see where your break evens are. If you've got crop that you can sell, you've got good, strong basis levels, move the product. This has been we thought last fall was going to be a tough year. This has been an extremely challenging production year for a lot of producers. Hopefully, you know, we can put it behind us and next year is going to be a little bit better. But, you know, the big thing I think that everybody needs to, that we're watching here as far as us up here in the north is that, it's going to still be a long drawn out harvest. It's not going to end just because winter comes. We're going to see product left out in the fields until March. Hopefully we can have most of it off in April, but our biggest concern is what's going to happen by the time we get into next year with production, because you know, our fields, we're going to see another year of nothing worked back for fields, no fertilizer on. A lot of producers not being able to buy a lot of fall product because there's no cash flow. So I think it's the beginning of what next year could be another interesting year to start.
Commodity Week, of course, is a production of Illinois Public Media. You may hear the whole of the program anytime you'd like on our website at willag.org, willag.org. Our thanks go to our panelists this week, including Dave Chatterton of Strategic Farm Marketing from right here in Champaign, Illinois, Bill Gentry from Risk Management Commodities out of Lafayette, Indiana, Randy Martinson from Martinson Ag Risk Management out of Fargo, North Dakota, and Mike Zuzlo at globalanalytics.biz in Atchison, Kansas. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.